Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up with you, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. You know, in the win and loss column, you have a one or a two or a two and a one, or some have the threes or whatever. But the truth is that some wins are bigger than others. Some losses feel bigger than others, right? I tweeted this out, and I don't know if you guys caught it. Auburn lost to Penn State, right? The week before? That's right? Right, okay. So Auburn was playing at home, and they actually benched Bo Nix, who's their starting quarterback. Dad played at Auburn. Bo Nix was supposed to be the savior, has yet to be the savior, but there's still time, but he struggled throwing the football. And so they actually benched him. And Auburn ends up kind of hanging on for a win. It was a wild weekend in college football. I don't know if Texas is back, but I know that Texas Tech is sure not back. Woo, what a whooping. Michigan runs to 4-0 with a survival of Rutgers 2013. I do think Rutgers continues to improve. Arkansas beats A&M. Same old Aggies, right? A lot of hype and not great. But Auburn, they needed 15 points in the fourth quarter. They were down at the half. They were down, 24-12 at the half. They come back and win. And what I was thinking to myself, and I actually tweeted, was Auburn's about to let Penn State beat him a second time. Like, some of those games are so big. We talked about this a little Friday. Fresno State came from behind and beat UCLA a week ago Saturday. So Friday, they had to turn around and play UNLV. UNLV, they ain't beat anybody in years. They were 0-3 coming in. And UNLV gave them a hell of a game. But our guy, Jake Haner, who, Jay Stu, have you gotten me Jake Haner yet? I didn't ask for Aaron Rodgers, although I'd like him. I didn't ask for Derek Carr, although I'd like him. I didn't ask for Tom Brady, although I'd like him. Or Matt Stafford, though I'd like him. I just said, hey, can you get me this quarterback from Fresno State who's setting the world on fire? And the answer is to this point, what?
It was a short week last week.
Yeah.
They said, rain check, please. So we're following up this week.
By the way, Connecticut covered. Only lost by 2 to Wyoming. Keep an eye on the Huskies. But again, Connecticut losing, there's a similar narrative there I'll get to in a second. But so Fresno, like, look, the win over UCLA was a 1.5 win. It was their fourth straight win in the Rose Bowl. And I'm sure there was coming down from that high is really hard. Turn around and playing UNLV, who that's their Super Bowl to take down Fresno State. But so much belief is gained. So much confidence is gained when you have one of these games where you highlight it on your schedule, you got your neck cleaned up for, right? Right? Anybody's ever been on national TV like, hey, man, do I need to have my neck cleaned up? You get a freshie, get a haircut, make sure you look good. You get your neck cleaned up for, you know, you got the good cleats, you got the good gloves, you're ready to go. The NFL is much the same way now. There's not the same emotion, but it's still big. I thought there were three wins yesterday that were bigger than the rest. The Chargers going into Kansas City and getting a win. Like, do people understand that the Chargers almost never beat the Chiefs? Right? Like, do people get that one? Like, it has been bad. Now, the Chargers have beaten the Chiefs now 2 consecutive times. Of course, last year was last game of the season, right? But previous to that, I think the Chargers had lost like 12 out of 13 to the Chiefs. And the only year they beat them in Kansas City was 2018 when they won 12 games. And that one was after a 9-game losing streak. They lost, they still, even though they've won 3 of the past 6 years, they've lost 12 of the past 15 games to the Kansas City Chiefs. That's 12-3, kids. I mean, look, they've been in L.A. since 2017, and they've beaten them three times since. And one was last year, last game of the season, where the Chiefs didn't play anybody, didn't play their dudes because they were so banged up. So I think that's a 1.5 win. You have a Justin Herbert. You have a brand new coach. You got a brand new defensive coordinator. And you get a win. You hang on. And the Raiders are in first. And the Chiefs are in last place in the AFC West. For the Chargers, a team that feels like they, we should have gotten that Cowboys game. If you would have given away another close one yesterday, it would have been same old Chargers. But now the Chargers are 2-1. They got the Raiders on Monday night. And they got a chance here to win this division. Whereas had they lost that game, even if they had the even record with the Chiefs, it would have put them a game behind. And then, of course, you got another game with well, I wouldn't have loved that. Rams, same way. Tampa comes in, and you know how it is. The Rams aren't as bad as the Chargers, but for those of you who haven't been to a football game in Los Angeles since these teams moved back, there's more Rams fans than our Chargers fans. The Rams used to be here, and it's good. They've done a good job with community outreach in L.A. But the fact is that if you go to a Rams game and they play Tampa, there's a bunch of Tom Brady fans with brand new Tampa t-shirts. And we can tell you, and people in the NFL can say how good Matt Stafford is, but until he plays well against the higher level of competition, you're always going to have naysayers. Well, he played great. And then I think the same can be said for the Green Bay Packers. They badly outplayed San Francisco, and yet San Francisco takes the lead late by 1 point, and Aaron Rodgers leads them on a 36-second drive, and they kick a game-winning field goal. Here's Aaron Rodgers talking about what that win meant to the team.
Give some legitimacy to some of the things we've been talking about. That was kind of an aberration, and that we are a talented football team. It felt like in the locker room today that we finally had the energy that I've been waiting to see. And before the game, it wasn't the type of energy we had in Jacksonville, but I knew we needed a spark. But the energy in the locker room post-game, that felt like a win. You know, it felt like there was such a growth moment for us, and I'm really, really happy for the guys to feel that. And you know, it feels like, okay, now we're on our way. Now we can get into this. Now we know how to win, and we can get this thing moving in the right direction.
What did he talk about there? He talked about the energy in the locker room after the win. That's because that win is not a normal win. That's a 1.5 win. It's just different. You get the monkey off your back. Man, every time we go to California, we come out flat. We get our asses kicked. Didn't yesterday. Every time we go to Florida, we come out flat. We get our asses kicked, right? Granted, it wasn't Florida. It was California. They played that team twice 2 years ago and got smacked both times. And they were the better football team. And they were a physical football team. And they still almost lost the game. They found all that matters is you have one more point than your opponent, like Baltimore today. I don't care. Like, should they have called delay of game? Yeah. Should have been called. But we got a chance, kicked the field goal, set the record, we're done, we're out of here. I cannot overstate this. Can't be overstated. Those three wins, the Chargers' ability with a new coach, a young quarterback, that's their first truly tough environment they've played in. Washington was somewhat. Kansas City's great. Plus, Kansas City's a really good team. And I know they turned it over a bunch. But to be +4 in the turnovers, to go and win a game on the road, for the Rams to have the defending champions and Tom Brady playing indoors and dominate the game, and for the Packers to beat San Francisco in San Francisco when they're a standalone game, those are worth more than just one win, even if the schedule only says one.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. When a train hits a vehicle at a railway crossing, the results are often deadly. Be cautious at crossings. If signals are going, don't be tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Even if you don't see a train stop, trains can't be paid for by NHTSA. When it goes, it goes, and it is gone. Have you guys seen Ben Roethlisberger play? And I know what you're like, there was a play where it was Was it 4th and 10? And they're in the red zone. And he does a little screen pass. He got confused. He thought they were blitzing. And he throws to, it wasn't even to the hot. He just dumps it off to his running back, Najee Harris, who gets tackled. I think he got tackled for a loss. There's an interception where he's trying to move and he can't move. And he forces the ball into three guys instead of out in the flats at a wide open wide receiver. There's a fumble or some sort of incomplete pass where he's running to his right and he just falls. People forget, when Jason Kidd was an all-time great point guard, when it went for him, he couldn't make a layup. Peyton Manning was terrible at the end for the Broncos. I know they won a Super Bowl. He had 9 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. Peyton Manning, in the conversation, the greatest quarterback ever. When it goes, it goes. Ben Roethlisberger, it's gone. It's just gone. I want to play for you something. This is Andrew Wiggins. This is a beaut. So Andrew Wiggins tried to use the religious out. Hey, it's against my religion to take the vaccine. And the NBA is like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. You still got to get vaccinated. So here's a Q&A with Andrew Wiggins. Again, the question is one of those. The first question was by a reporter, and it's one of those, God, you know, sorry, I got to ask you this, and it's really annoying. But instead of just asking the question, the follow-up was pretty good. Take a listen.
Hey, Andrew, I know it's a private issue, like you said. Last year, when we asked about it, you were a little more open. You said, you know, if I get to a point where I have to take the vaccine, I'll do it. Do you feel like you're in a position where you're going to have to make a choice? And is that frustrating? Because I know you have your personal beliefs, and I want to keep them personal, what, you know, you don't want to tell us. But are you at a spot where you feel like your back's against the wall and you have to make a choice either way? And is that frustrating?
Back is definitely, you know, against the wall. But I'm just going to keep fighting for what I believe, and whether it's one thing or another, get the vaccination or not get the vaccination, who knows? I'm just going to, you know, keep fighting for what I believe and what I believe is right. You know, what's right to one person isn't right to the other, you know, vice versa.
Andrew, you seem pretty convinced. What's the reason for not just explaining what you believe?
Because it's none of your business. That's what it comes down to. You know, I don't ask you guys about your beliefs. I don't ask you guys what you think is right or wrong. You know, we're different people. It can be like parenting. Like, you know, some people shed their beliefs onto their children. Some people let their children to grow up and believe what they want to believe. You know, who are you guys where I have to explain what I believe or, you know, what's right, what's wrong in my mind? We're two totally different people. You know, what you think is not what I think. What I think is not what you think.
Okay, so help me out here, guys. That is one of the most nonsensical answers to a very reasonable follow-up question I've ever heard. And Andrew Wiggins is not an idiot, by the way. It's not one of these guys, he's an idiot. Now, whatever his beliefs are not based upon anything sort of factual, whatever. But here's the biggest problem is, well, I believe what I believe. What do you believe? Well, I don't ask you what you believe. Why not? Go ahead, ask. We're not asking about your religion. We're not asking about your sexual orientation. We're asking about a public health crisis in which the government of Canada, where he was born and grew up, and the government of the United States have both said, like, you need to get vaccinated. Not just for you, but for everybody else. And maybe the easier way to explain it, okay, is it's a lot like why you would foul up three. Why do you foul up three? You know, guys only make 40% of their threes anyway, plus we're pressuring. And okay, but in order to lose a game or even tie a game up three with like 2 seconds to go, when you foul up three, they got to make, you know, they make the first free throw. There's like a 70-80% chance of them making. Then they got to miss the free throw. Then they got to tip it out. Then they got to get the ball. Then they got to shoot it. Then they got to make it again. It's all about probabilities. But I mean, in one of those, stick out your chest as if you are so brave and tough in the face of some unforeseen adversity. Like, hey, dude, what do you believe in? You tell us. Because there's something he doesn't. Does Andrew Wiggins have the secret we don't know? No. Your back's not against the wall. Nobody's out to get you. What do you believe in? That's personal. Well, no, you're making it public saying that your beliefs are the ones keeping you from doing what your team's asking you to do. It's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's welcome in Joel Klatt. He joins us. What was that? What was that like in Chicago where you have so many Subway alums and so many Big Ten fans? That seemed like a hell of a spot to be. What was that like to call that game?
It was as unique a game as I remember calling. That's my first time in Soldier Field, actually. And I was struck by how intimate it is and small it actually is, kind of fans right on top of you. It's not huge. I think there's just over 60,000. But it was a great environment, absolutely a great environment. Wisconsin fans are terrific. The Notre Dame fans were terrific. Obviously, a ton of them there. And then the game turned out, I thought, to be a great game. I mean, obviously, the score looks like it's a total blowout, but that was a great game through basically 3.5 quarters.
What happened?
Well, the bottom line is that Wisconsin's offense cannot get out of its own way. And that is a team that has a defense that's playing top 10 caliber defense and an offense that is playing, as bad as any out there, just no detail whatsoever. They make massive mistakes. They've got penalties from veteran players, pre-snap, false starts, holding calls on veteran offensive linemen on first down. They get behind the chains, and they have an inability to play offense when you dictate to them what they need to do. If they're off schedule, if they're one-dimensional, they cannot play offense. And Notre Dame did that. And really, it was the kick return. So, Doug, the key play, and I know everyone's going to talk about, man, Mertz had so many interceptions and this or that. The key play is that when Wisconsin took control of the game, and yes, 13-10 is control of the game with that defense, they can basically squeeze the life out of you at that point with their defense, in particular with the backup quarterback in for Notre Dame, Pine. And then they allow a kick return for a touchdown. So Chris Tyree's touchdown on that kick return, that's the ball game. And then immediately they go out there again. That one of those penalties on first down, they end up fumbling. Notre Dame takes advantage, and then the momentum just spiraled away from them. But the lack of detail and execution on that offense is pretty staggering, to be honest with you.
What do you think Notre Dame should do at quarterback?
Well, I think Pine, while it was a great story, Doug, he still is not the guy that's going to give you the best chance to win over the course of four quarters. He did great, and there were a lot of things that he did well. But let's make no mistake about it. The reason they were in position to win the game is because Jack Cohn played like an absolute warrior. The game plan for him going in was that he was going to throw it 40 to 45 times. Any run game from Notre Dame was going to be a token run game because of the stellar front seven for the Badgers. And Cohn did that for the most part. I mean, he was playing a heck of a game and had them right there for that moment when in the fourth quarter they could, obviously take control of the game. But the other part of it is that they knew he was going to get sacked a few times because of the developmental nature of their offensive line. He knew it. That takes an immense amount of fortitude, Doug, to sit in there. Trust me when I tell you this. I've played behind poor offensive lines, and I've played against teams like Miami and Texas and Oklahoma in those games. And you walk onto the field, and you take a deep breath, and you're like, all right, this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt a lot. And Cohn hung in there, and I thought he put them in position for – that fourth quarter run. So I'm still in the camp that he needs to be the quarterback. I think that they're best when he's their quarterback, and then they're best when he can then hand over the reins in the run game to Buckner, who comes in when he's healthy, and then he can be the change of pace at quarterback.
Joel Klatt joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Now, technically, Texas A&M last year, 9-1, 8-1 in SEC play, and they won the Orange Bowl. But most people take last year and kind of throw it away, a little bit of a different year. But let's let the Aggies have their great year. This was supposed to be the year, right? Jimbo's in year four. These are all his recruits. He got another contract extension. Alabama's young can be had. And, you know, this, but you and I were Big 12 dudes. We remember that it was like the third year of the Big 12. They won the league, lost in the Sugar Bowl. And outside of that, they're somewhere between 5 and 3 wins in conference every year. What happened to the Aggies in Dallas, or actually in Arlington, against the Razorbacks on Saturday?
Well, they just got beat up, and they haven't played to the level that we thought or anticipated they would play to all year. This is a team that played a one-possession game against Colorado. That same Colorado team went out the next week and got beat 30-0 by Minnesota, who then just went out last week and got beat by whom? Bowling Green? Who was it?
Yeah, Bowling Green was a 30-point dog
in that game.
We were watching the game, and I was explaining to my son, no, it's not Bowling Green, Kentucky. That's Bowling Green, Ohio. I was like, how many Bowling Greens are there? I go, I don't know. Not as many as Springfield. How many Springfields are there? A lot. I don't know. Anyway,
a lot. That's right. So, you know, this is a team that has massively underachieved so far. And Kent State, they didn't look great. They were tied in that one, you know, going into the second half. 10-7 against Colorado. New Mexico, their offense still sputtering a little bit. And then clearly their offensive woes in the 20-10 loss to Arkansas. Now, I think Arkansas is pretty good, but there is an issue with Texas A&M, and the issue lies on the offensive side. They're only averaging 23 points a game. I mean, that's not going to cut it. Their passing offense is not nearly what it needs to be. When you look at this team, we all thought, and I anticipated this, Doug, I thought that they were going to be very good. I thought that they were going to be able to run the ball. I thought that they were going to be able to play great defense and bring a young quarterback along. And granted, he got injured, Hayes King, but Calzada has just not been the answer. And I know you and I'm sure you get a lot of Aggie fan ire, as I do as well, for pointing out the simple fact that they have throughout, save for a year here and there, and this is not all that dissimilar to a lot of programs, but Texas A&M wants to view themselves as some sort of blue blood, highly successful year in and year out program. That's not the case. They weren't that in the Big 12. They were a middling program in the Big 12, save for a couple of years. They've been a middling program in the SEC, save for a couple of years. They are who they have been for a number of years, 20, 30 years right now. So I guess we shouldn't have expected anything different.
You know who A&M is? A&M's the guy in basketball or in football. Like in football, he shows up. He's got the new cleats. He's got the gold mouthpiece. He's got the visor, the tinted visor. He's got the back pad, right? I mean, looks the part. Like, man, that guy looks pretty good. And then you watch him play. He's like, got all the expensive stuff. Doesn't have necessarily the stuff that matters. That really.
And I couldn't agree with you more. And it happens in every sport. He's the guy that shows up in J's but can't shoot a J.
Yes. Yes. No question. Have you seen this Mario Cristobal video?
Yeah, I have.
I won't paint you any. What are your thoughts when you see him getting on a wide receiver for spinning a football in his fifth catch of the season? When they get a first down,
I might get in trouble for this. I found nothing wrong with it whatsoever. That's standards have to be held by somebody. We are so soft as a culture, so soft. Social media has made us immensely soft as a culture, and everybody wants to be a victim of something in our culture. Everybody. This is a kid making a mistake, mental mistake, in which you are going to get your butt chewed. I don't care if it's Tuesday and no one's around, or if it's Saturday and there's 57,000 in the stands at Austin Stadium, you're going to get it. If you're a program worth your salt at all, you're going to have standards, and somebody has to hold those standards. And at many times, those standards have to be set and held by the head coach. This guy, Mario Cristobal, is the son of Cuban immigrants. His dad, every single night when they sat down to dinner, he explained it to me as it was a reckoning of what I had done that day. Did I take care of my jobs that day? A reckoning. That's his background. He coaches for Nick Saban. His background is a reckoning every day. Yeah. It's not a slap it on the butt and say, hey, you'll be okay. Like, that's not the type of program that he's trying to build. And my favorite part of the video, and forgive me for not knowing his name. Why don't I know the kid's name? Because I just did their game, but I'm terrible with names. He looked at him dead in the eye, didn't quiver, didn't shout back, and he said, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yep.
To me, that's great. That is a great moment. And guess what? It didn't go on from that. He threw his headset, screamed at him. Kid said, yes, sir, and they both walk away. Point was made. Point was taken. That's quality coaching. Sometimes it's hard, folks. Maybe we shouldn't be so soft.
Yeah. And oh, yeah, by the way, first of all, you don't have to say pretty please when you're coaching. You just don't. I mean, that's part of it. It's also, it's loud, it's intense, and all the other kids, Chris Hudson, by the way, is the kid's name.
There you go.
You know, he's a freshman from Compton. Like, I guarantee that's the last time he does it. You know?
Exactly.
Problem solved.
What's the last point of that interaction? To prevent him from doing that again.
No, wait. Also, to prevent everybody else from doing it again. Right?
Excellent point. That's an excellent point. If people think that it's always just interpersonal relationships on football teams or teams in general, you're wrong. Sometimes you have to make a point for the team at the expense of one guy, and that might be it. But guess what? That's what it is. I mean, Doug, anybody that has played the game at a high level at all has been absolutely undressed in front of their teammates or fans or both at one point in their career.
Correct.
It just happened.
Correct.
So why, like, I don't understand it. I really don't. Oh, he shouldn't have done that. Done what?
Here's the, you and I are lockstep in this. You're not going to get in trouble for it because we're on the right side of it. And most every coach, Rod Gilmore was the announcer and he thought it was too much. And he and I got into it on Twitter and it's not close to it. But here is the part about the treatment of players. Okay, let's go to Spencer Rattler. Hasn't played nearly up to his billing. Oklahoma survives West Virginia. Now, I understand that fans feel more empowered to say whatever they want to say, even more now than when you and I played. It started with message boards. It moves to social media. And now these kids are basically paid professionals, right, with name, image, and likeness. And so the switch in people's brains switched to, I can say whatever I want to say for this kid because he's no longer a college kid. He's a professional playing with my college's logo. They start chanting for the backup by name? Like, I've been around this a long time. You've called games. You've played it a long time. Have you ever heard somebody chanting the backup's name of a starting quarterback who, by the way, started the year as the Heisman favorite?
No, I think it was mostly students from what I understand. And I think that they're probably very immature, right? Like, Oklahoma fans are better than this. I think you would agree with that.
No, they're not.
Oh, come on.
No, they're not. And I'd like, they're great fans. They support their team. No, they're not. Now, do I think they're better than chanting the backup's name? Yes. Now, they'll go on the local sports shows and be like, hey, we need to get Caleb up and Caleb ready to see what he can do, right? But I would say, if you're telling me they're better than students chanting the name, yes. Why would anybody want to go to play for a school? You want to go recruit in the SEC? Like, you want to go play for somebody when you start playing poorly, they start chanting for your backup? Like, dude, no thanks.
I think that it is a great fan base that has become entitled. A sector of them has become entitled. They support their team, and through that support, they demand excellence. Now, they're not smart about it, because the reality is that you could put Patrick Mahomes behind that offensive line right now, and it wouldn't be much better, because the problem is not Spencer Rattler. I watched last night every snap from that game on the coach's film. And, Doug, the offensive line for Oklahoma should be embarrassed. Embarrassed. They should all be putting I'm sorry notes in Spencer Rattler's locker, because this guy is bearing the brunt of the fans' frustration for the offense when the offense's problem is the five guys up front. They were awful. I'm not going to mince any words about it. They were awful. And this kid's going to have to hear his backup name. Like, put Caleb Williams in there. And guess what he's going to see? Akeem Mezidor, number 90, unblocked again. Because there's four whiffs in the first 15 plays, and Akeem Mezidor is in the lap of Spencer Rattler or in the lap of Eric Gray. I charted the plays, and in the first 29 plays, there's 8 plays in the first 29 of the game where the offensive line, it's not just like, oh, didn't do their job. Total breakdown, runs and passes. Total breakdown. Spencer Rattler had no shot in that game to play anywhere close to his ability or his potential. And it's because of those five guys up front that have played putrid football as of so far in this season. And I feel bad for Rattler because he actually made a couple of nice throws. And then on other plays, he's forced into positions that there's just no chance, none whatsoever. So that's why I bristle at his backup being chanted for. It's like, hey fans, don't be stupid. Why don't you chant for the backup offensive lineman? You know, so, like, listen, I think it's a great fan base. They support their team as well as anybody across the country. I think a sector of them have become somewhat entitled. And if they're going to fix themselves at all as a program, it has to start up front because that offensive line was awful.
All right. I do agree it's a great fan base. They've been entitled for a long, long time, brother.
That's what happens when you win at the level that they've won.
Okay, Michigan, you got them this weekend. Right? You got them against Wisconsin. They go to Camp Randall. They go to, this Michigan schedule. Go to Wisconsin, go to Nebraska, Northwestern at home, go to Michigan State, Indiana at home, go to Penn State, go to Maryland, then Ohio State. And can they throw a forward pass? Like, this is the craziest thing. You got a guy who's supposed to be the quarterback guru, can't settle on a quarterback. Now they don't even try. Now they're just going to run it and play on their defense.
It's bizarre. It's beyond bizarre. I mean, they've got a five-star quarterback that's their backup, not saying that he should play. Cade McNamara, their actual quarterback, four-star quarterback, number 7 overall quarterback in his class, 2-time Gatorade Nevada Player of the Year. Guy came in, lit up Rutgers when they were down by 17 last year to come back. I think the injury to Ronnie Bell on the outside has made it really tough for them. He was their best wide receiver, and I think that really makes it tough. They only completed one ball in the second half last week.
For seven yards.
It's staggering. And listen, rest assured, they will not be able to just run the football in Wisconsin. That is not afforded you. I just talked about it a little bit earlier, that Jack Cohn, his game plan, Notre Dame's game plan was for him to throw 40, 45 times because Wisconsin was going to stop them running the ball. They can't run the ball. I think Michigan, at best, could run the ball for about 85, 90, 95 yards in this game. And they're going to have to do something on the outside. They're going to have to find some way to throw the ball more efficiently. Now, he had some big plays, explosive plays in the first half. And they've got to find ways to duplicate that here going forward.
This should be exciting. Might be a little underwhelming. Joel Klatt, who'll be alongside Gus. Michigan at Wisconsin. Camp Randall, fifth quarter, noon kickoff on Fox. Great stuff, dude. Thanks for joining us.
I love it. Have a good one, Doug. See you, bud.
You too. How long will one of the league's top running backs be out of action? Plus our picks on tonight's game. Next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Before we get to the press, Dan Beyer, your pick tonight's game. Cowboys 3.5-point favorites over the Eagles. Over-under is 51.5.
I'll take the over, but I'm going to take the Eagles tonight.
Ooh,
yes.
A little bit of an upset there. Jalen Hurts and the Eagles. Nick Sirianni, what say you, Jay Stu?
I think it's 28-17 Cowboys. So it's like a Cowboys cover, and I think that's the under. Under 51.5, right?
Yes. Yes. You got Cowboys and the under. Okay, Ramos?
I'll take the Cowboys and the under as well.
I got the Cowboys and the under. I think Cowboys score a lot of points. I don't think it's terribly close, but I could be wrong. Eagles have looked, especially week one when I watched them, they were unbelievable. But week ones can be deceiving. Look at the Steelers. Let's get to the press.
The press.
Okay, so now we're on the Marlins, right? We're in Miami in the Marlins station, right? And our affiliate in Jersey is the Rutgers station, right? I love it.
John just needs some free gear. That's all that.
John needs some of that big R gear. They just do R. Do you like R or do you like U?
I think R for Ramos.
R for Ramos.
Yeah,
I agree.
How about we start out with this?
I can text Pat Hobbs. He's the AD there. He's a good friend. Anyway,
okay. I was going to say, R. Kelly today, convicted on all 9 counts in his sex trafficking trial, faces the possibility of life in prison when he's sentenced on May 4th. So speaking of ours.
You know, it's weird. Okay, will you still listen to I Believe I Can Fly, which is an incredible song?
He has a lot of other better songs, but it definitely, everything is, there's always been that about R. Kelly and the lyrics. I mean, it's just, for what he's done over the last decade is just so far out to Mars in my mind. But, Bump and Grind and there were some really good early songs.
But here's what I'm saying, like I Believe I Can Fly is a great, like, personal perseverance sort of song, right? It's an unbelievable song, and his voice is incredible. Can you still listen to it? Maybe we'll get to that tomorrow. All right, let's get into more sports.
Something to look forward to. Davante Adams of the Packers apparently followed protocols, which allowed him to get back on the field after just one play when it appeared that he was knocked a bit woozy. The NFL released a statement saying, quote, as with any play that leads to a medical evaluation, we followed up with the unaffiliated neurotrauma consultant and team medical staff to review the events. All concussion protocols were fully followed, and Adams was cleared by both the consultant and the team doctor.
Yeah, he said he got the wind knocked out of him. That was what was hard, not the... He said he knew he wasn't concussed. When reached for comment, Davante Adams said, I'm Batman.
he said something similar, like, I'm built different. That's what it was. Christian McCaffrey is built different than most of us, but he still suffered a hamstring strain in their win Thursday night in Houston. Today, head coach Matt Rhule gave a little bit more information to say that McCaffrey not headed to IR. So that's good news. If he was going to miss the next 3 games, they likely would have placed him on short-term injured reserve, but it doesn't appear to be a long-term injury, but just no word on week 4 for Christian.
Doesn't help
McCaffrey.
Anybody's fantasy team with no word on week 4.
No, but if you were, I mean, considering the guy played like 4 games last season, this is at least a little bit of a breather as opposed to what happened
a year ago. I take that. It's a fair point.
A.J. Brown, wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans, considered week to week, according to ESPN. You know, I got to throw these fantasy tidbits in there in the press at the end. But A.J. Brown had to leave yesterday's game against the Colts in the first half, and week to week is an injury. So that's not necessarily great for Tennessee.
If he was listed day to day, I could say, and aren't we all?
Yes. Right. Moving on to other NFL news, Josh Gordon's going to be back in the NFL, reinstated, and set to sign with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Does he make it through the season?
Yeah, I will say yes.
I will say yes, too. Can he actually play anymore?
I think so, but not to what old Josh Gordon. And finally, Doug, Nuggets at forward Michael Porter Jr. have agreed to terms on a 5-year max extension, according to ESPN.
Guy can really, really score. Really score. He and Trae Young, same AAU team. No wonder they won a bunch of games. Both can really score. Denver's one of those teams that, you know, with the Lakers changing from a defensive team to the offensive team, that sounds great. Denver's even better, right? They got Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr., and they got Jokic, and then they get, what's his name, back off the torn ACL, who was the best player in the bubble. Wow.
Jamal Murray,
yeah. That's the press. Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
I think big game for Jalen Hurts, who so far has looked like a quarterback of the present. I think tonight Dallas wins big. Back tomorrow on the Doug Gottlieb Show.